morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're gonna start the Planning Commission meeting for 10/28/2020, and I'm gonna ask everybody to unmute your mics, and Ramona will call the roll.
Commissioner Moultari?
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
And Chairman Brown?
Here. Now, if you would join me in the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
To the flag.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Very patriotic. Okay, I'm going to read my paragraph of protocols. Thank you. I'm going to ask everybody to please bear with us today. The county planning commissioners, staff, and members of the public wishing to participate in live comment are participating in this meeting using Zoom. An alternate message for public participation can be found on the agenda, as well as a link to a user's guide for public participation. The public may watch or listen to the meeting live at SLO website. If you're a member of the public wishing to provide the public comment and have joined us by the website or smartphone application, when I call your public comment on a specific item, please do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen. If you're joining us by phone, press 9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, the clerk will unmute your connection and announce your name or at least the last three digits of your phone number if you are calling in. And let us know that you are live on the line to make your comments. You will be timed for 3 minutes as usual. If you're streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or the county website and wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early, as there's an approximately 60-second delay between meeting and the live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during public comment to reduce the interference. All right. Public comment. We're going to take public comment or live recordings at this time on items that are not on today's agenda.
Thank you, Chairperson Brown. We do not have pre-recorded messages. For members of the public wishing to speak during general public comment, you can do so by using the raise hand feature, as the chair mentioned, or by pressing star 9 at this time to request to speak for general public comment. And I am seeing no requests to speak, Chair.
Thank you. That'll close this part of the public comment period. Staff, if you could please give us some idea of future Planning Commission days, proposals, as well as actions taken at the most recent Board of Supervisors meeting in regard to hearings or of appeals.
Good morning, Chair Brown and Commissioners. Alexandria Fowler, representing the Planning and Building Department. Recent board action includes, just this past Tuesday on October 6th, the Board of Supervisors held a public hearing regarding the Cannabis Phase 3 Ordinance Amendment changes that they directed staff to make when the item was heard on August 18th, 2020. The board approved the proposed amendments, which will clarify and codify existing practices, provide information necessary for environmental review, and inform applicants early in the process of what will be required. Regarding appeals of Planning Commission actions, there are still three pending appeals for board consideration. However, they do not have hearing dates scheduled. For your next Planning Commission meetings, the following items are scheduled. For your October 22nd meeting, there is a conditional use permit for the construction of a wireless communications facility within a 60-foot tall faux elevated water tank on a 19-acre parcel located at 3939 El Pomar Drive, approximately 5 miles east of the community of Templeton. There's a conditional use permit for the construction of a winery facility and tasting room on a 53-acre parcel located at 1535 Kyler Canyon Road, approximately 2 miles west of the city of Paso Robles. And there's a general plan amendment for the amendment of the official maps, Part 3 of the coastal land use element, by rezoning 0.4 acres of commercial retail to residential single family in the Cayucas Urban Reserve Line, located at a property at 2958 Orville Avenue, approximately 200 feet east of Highway 101 in the community of Cayucas. For your November 12th meeting, the following items have been scheduled. A conditional use permit for cannabis activities, including outdoor cultivation, nursery and existing structures, and parking modifications on a 99-acre parcel located at 1255 Tierra Redonda Road, approximately 25 miles west of Highway 101 in the community of Bradley. There's a conditional use permit for multi-phased cannabis activities, including outdoor and indoor cultivation, nursery, processing, manufacturing, and a parking modification on a 225-acre parcel located at 12415 River Road, approximately 2.2 miles northwest of Pozo Village. And a third conditional use permit, for multi-phase cannabis activities, including outdoor and indoor cultivation, nursery, manufacturing, processing, transport, and parking modification on a 110-acre parcel located at 7575 Carissa Highway, approximately 8 miles northwest of the village of California Valley. At that hearing, you should also be presented with hearing dates for the calendar year of 2021. For your December 10th meeting, which will be your last meeting of the year, the following items have been scheduled. Major grading permit and EIR for the excavation of hydrocarbon impacted soils at varying depths and widths within affected areas along a pipeline alignment consistent with the Phillips 66 Corrective Action Plan, including backfilling the excavations and restoring the site to current grade on an 899-acre parcel located at 9295 Zebra Buena Avenue on a portion of the property known as the Santa Margarita Ranch, just north of the community of Santa Margarita. There's a conditional use permit for cannabis activities, including indoor cultivation, manufacturing, processing, transport, fence modification, and parking modification on a 22-acre parcel located at 375 Meshula Road, approximately 1 mile northeast of the community of Napomo. There's the continuation of a minor use permit and coastal development permit to allow for the outdoor storage of sea trains in the Avila Beach parking lot located at 450 2nd Street in the community of Avila. There's a conditional use permit for the construction and operation of a new wireless broadband communications facility with associated antennas and equipment on a 155-foot tall faux monopine tree on a 7-acre parcel located at 2780 Black Walnut Drive, south of the city of San Luis Obispo. And there's a tract map and conditional use permit to subdivide an existing 5.63-acre parcel into a residential plan development and residential small lot single-family cluster, resulting in 20 residential parcels, an open space parcel, and a remainder parcel. Construction of single-family residences on the newly created parcels, and modification of multiple development standards. The site is located at the corner of Old Country Road and Gibson Road in the community of Templeton. And lastly, the mineral resource designation amendments will be coming to your commission for consideration. The December 10th meeting is very full, as it is the last meeting of the year. So please note that the estimation right now is that on December 10th, it will be a full hearing day, so 9 to 5, with your lunch break and your other morning and afternoon breaks. And the commission may need to consider going past 5 p.m. to hear and act on all the items that are currently scheduled. This concludes staff's update. I'm available for any questions.
Thanks, Andrea. This is Mike. Could you, in our next packet, include the changes to the cannabis ordinance that the board approved on Tuesday for us, please?
And yes,
could you, and could you indicate, too, whether they intended those to take effect immediately in all pending cases, or if there is any kind of grandfathering for those that are in the hopper under the existing ordinance prior to Tuesday?
Yes, we can provide that. And Erlyn Singwald may be on the line right now to answer that last question for you.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Erlyn Singwald, planning staff. So to make sure I give you the most accurate answer to that, I think we'll just go ahead and include that in the report that we bring back to the commission at your request.
That'd be great. Thanks.
The project manager.
Thank you.
Okay. We're at the consent agenda, and commissioners, if you have any items you would like to pull separately and discuss, we'll do that now. If not, I'll ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll so move to approve the consent agenda, Ms. Mills.
Okay. Second. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda, please so say so by saying aye.
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 Noes? Okay, that's been approved. And that brings us to the main item on the agenda, which is the Estero Area Plan and Los Osos Community Plan. I want to say a few things before we start on this, and I'd really like staff to jump in if we could. In reviewing this myself, it's been a while, and I did look at part of the tape. I think our intention was to have today's discussion center on the maps and the ESHA, although one item, which is the Krebs memo, actually covers lots of other things besides ESHA and maps. So it seems to me, unless somebody else has a different idea, that we will have to discuss, and then, of course, the public will have to weigh in on other things besides maps and ESHA. The Krebs memo was very broad and had to do with a lot of things besides maps and ESHA. Commissioners, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I think we definitely need to open up the, you know, the comments from the public, and I think we can look at the whole scope of the plan so that perhaps we might even be able to move it on today.
Okay. Well, that's sort of what I thought.
I totally agree. I totally agree. We need to look at the whole thing in its entirety.
All right, so I'll ask you. So we're kind of starting from ground zero,
We've certainly covered a lot of ground so far. I think we're on.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Okay. Ramona, would you introduce that, please?
Hearing item number four is a continued hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend and update the Estero Area Plan, Part 2 of the Land Use and Circulation Element of the General Plan and the Local Coastal Plan. County file number LRP 2011-00016 and LRP 2020-0006. Supervisorial District Number 2, Project Manager Carrie Brown. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9 if you are joining us by phone at this time in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Brown.
Good morning, Planning Commission. This is Carrie Brown. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Then, with me today is Kylie Hensley, Corey Hahn, and Erlyn Singwald, and we will be presenting if my computer works. I'm stuck on, there we go. Okay, the Los Osos Community Plan and Growth Management Ordinance, which are Commission considered on July 9th and August 13th and continue to today. Your commission directed staff to come back with additional information. Specifically, the items requested were provide a series of maps that led to the current environmentally sensitive habitat or ESHA map, describe how the HCP would help landowners develop their parcels, clarify relationship between the overlapping plans, the community plan and the habitat conservation plan, and describe the difference between mapped versus unmapped ESHA. In addition, your commission wanted written responses to the comments raised by Mr. Krebs, and I noticed I spelled his last name wrong there, and also correct identified mistakes in the circulation element. So we'll start with the first one, which is a series of maps leading to the current environmentally sensitive habitat mapping. We have the maps that our Los Osos HCP consultant prepared and refined, and we started with that habitat mapping. And then we excluded areas based on two criteria, areas of degraded and or disturbed habitat, and then areas that were surrounded by development. And now I'm going to kind of just go over those maps kind of slowly. We worked on these, or our consultant worked on these in the 2015 and 2016. So these were the maps that were used for the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan, the vegetation cover. This is also kind of more detailed on the vegetation mapping that was done. So these were kind of the base maps that were used. And then we took those and started to look at environmentally sensitive habitat areas, kind of overlaying that on there. So this was kind of the first draft that we that was produced. And this was looking at the map vegetation and other land types. And then this is the second one that we worked on, and this was in August. And you can see.
Hey, this is Jay Brown. Is this the 2016 map? Because they're not. I don't see the dates on them, so I got a little. Oh, I see.
No, this is not the 2016, but I will get to that one yet.
Okay, so in backing up, I'm trying to remember what it is that I specifically wanted to see in these maps, and I think the concern or the question I had was how do these maps. How did the ESHA move with the different maps? I think we accumulated ESHA. Is that basically one of the problems that people are having with these maps? And so we wanted to know where we started with the ESHA designations and how we got to where we are right now. Is that
correct? Sure. Yes. It seems as though many persons from the public had concerns about the Esha mapping, specifically their parcels being within Esha.
So can you, from that point of view, highlight, you know, where maybe some of these places that were not Esha are Esha now?
Okay.
And
I think you're probably leading to that by reviewing the original map. Are you not, Carrie?
Yeah, I was going to. We have a series of maps, so I was kind of just going to go over.
We wanted to see, you know, year by year, how the Esha changed locations.
Okay, so this was in 2015, and it wasn't that the, you know, we were looking at the sites specifically. Let me go to the next one. And then this was 2015 too. Again, this was based on that mapping. There was some concern about the area in the middle of town. And so we were going to look at that area separately. This was in our November draft, and then we, took that out because it was surrounded by development. And then let's see. So this was the map. Yep. Back. This was the map that we then submitted to our environmental consultant that was working on the EIR. And they took this map and created this map. So that's kind of how the mapping evolved.
How much more Esha evolved between those two steps, would you
say? Well, probably, you know, there were some areas that were mapped Esha originally that were taken out of it, so it's kind of hard to say exactly. Like this, I wonder if you can see my cursor, this area in here, a lot of this was mapped originally, but when we did look at the habitat mapping, that area came out. But, you know, this area has been of concern for the property owner. That was not in because our initial mapping had everything outside of the urban services line, which is this line here, within the Esha. There are some areas in the middle in here that were not designated also. So those areas and some over here. So not a lot, but there were some areas that we didn't map as Esha initially, and then they were, after we looked at the habitat and the mapping, we did recommend that. But we can talk, we have more to talk about on Esha that may be helpful to you. So I'm going to go on to the next one, which Erlyn is going to present the next few slides.
Thank you, Carrie. So Erlyn Singwall, planning staff. As you know, there's been a lot of discussion at the commission level and with Coastal Commission and internally with staff about whether and to what extent areas within the Los Osos URL and USL should be mapped as Esha. So I think it's really important to emphasize that, you know, regardless of the county's ultimate decision regarding mapping of Esha in the URL, there are areas within the URL that could qualify as Esha. Whether or not their map is Esha, they could be deemed Esha, particularly due to the presence of baywood fine soils. Practically the entire USL contains baywood fine soils. We have received indication from Coastal Commission that criteria on its own could support an unmapped Esha determination. And that creates a conflict with provisions of the Coastal Act that severely limit development potential in Esha. For example, if a site's designated Esha, then only a resource-dependent use could be established, which excludes any type of, typical private development. A private development, like, say, a home, could be developed in Esha only when findings are made that it's the least amount of development possible, to avoid a takings case against the county and Coastal Commission. So development potential is extremely limited in Esha, regardless of whether it's mapped Esha or unmapped Esha. And that creates a conflict with sections of the Coastal Act and with the Los Osos Community Plan and HCP, which encouraged development within the USL. So within the USL, we have areas that could be deemed ESHA, yet we have a community plan of HCP that encouraged development in those areas consistent with another section of the Coastal Act. So working with council, we developed some recommended findings that could address that conflict to allow for build-out of the community plan and implementation of the HCP. And that's what the next slide talks about. Terry, if you could advance the slide.
Excuse me. This is Jay Brown. I have another question on the difference to somebody seeking a permit. In two cases, they're seeking a permit in to build a home on a parcel that's marked ESHA versus seeking to build a home that is not marked ESHA. What is the real difference and the cost difference? Because in some cases, it sounds like, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it's ESHA mapped or unmapped ESHA. In other words, they
right,
still
so
have...
As we've discussed before, the primary difference, maybe the only difference between mapped and unmapped ESHA is that a permit to build in mapped ESHA is automatically appealable to the Coastal Commission. If a site
that
is
would be...
unmapped ESHA, say it...
Go ahead.
So if a site is designated unmapped ESHA due to the presence of baywood fine soils or other habitat criteria on the site, it's subject to all of the same rules. For example, only resource-dependent uses are allowed. Development would have to be the very minimum to avoid a taking. It would be subject to, strict avoidance measures, habitat protection measures. But it wouldn't necessarily be appealable to the Coastal Commission unless it's appealable for another reason. For example, if it's between, the shore and the first public road paralleling the shore, that's another reason why it could be appealable. But the presence of mapped ESHA wouldn't make it appealable.
Would make it appealable. Would. And the person doing that appeal would be the county, I guess.
No, the Coastal Commission could appeal, or a neighbor,
okay.
A member of the public could appeal the project to the Coastal Commission.
All right. So, in terms of the amount of on the ground work, as far as identifying that ESHA, is there any difference? Or both of them, you have to have a site survey. You have to have a report. You have to hire a consultant, I assume. Is that true so far?
So,
Erlen, why don't you finish your alternatives here? I think, Mr. Chairman, some of that might be answered by this.
Right. So then I'll go ahead and just finish this slide. So, again, kind of the fundamental issue here is how do we address ESHA in such a way that allows for build out of the community plan and implementation of the HCP? So, the first option would be kind of what we originally proposed in the public review draft of the community plan, which is no mapped ESHA within the USL. Again, that's what's kind of consistent with the, vision for the build out of Los Osos and consistent with the way the HCP is structured. With this option, we could also create an overlay that wouldn't be ESHA, because again, as soon as we say an area within the USL is ESHA, we're severely limiting development potential in that area, inconsistent with the community plan. And Carrie, can you just go to the next slide really quick so I can kind of demonstrate what that overlay would look like?
Sorry. Oh, there we go.
So here, this is, the ESHA map in the public hearing draft. So we would take the green areas within the USL. And instead of calling those ESHA, we would call them some environmentally sensitive area or have some overlay recognizing that these are areas that, you know, with our biologists, we've determined are more sensitive, contain, you know, more sensitive habitat areas, and therefore development within those areas are not subject to all the strict ESHA rules because development will have to participate in the EHCP, but they may be subject to some additional environmental protection standards that would allow those sites to be developed. So in other words, it's not imposing that very strict, rigorous ESHA standard to these environmentally sensitive sites within the USL, because the vision of the plan, again, is for that area to ultimately be developed. And then, Carrie, if you go back to the previous slide again. So another kind of iteration of this option would just be no overlay, just saying everything in the USL is envisioned, you know, to be developed that's consistent with provisions of the Coastal Act that say development should be concentrated in existing or urban areas where there's services to avoid impacts to, you know, more intact sensitive ESHA areas. And County Council assisted us in drafting a finding that's attached to the staff report, which declares that internal Coastal Act conflict, and there are provisions in the Coastal Act that allows a local agency to declare such a conflict and propose a resolution, and that would allow development within the USL. And the benefit of that is, you know, down the road, if we have a development project within the USL, say maybe in one of those green, more sensitive habitat areas, or really anywhere in the USL on Baywood fine soils, it allows a kind of programmatic approach, and it provides a structure for the county to support the decision to approve development there, despite the fact that there is criteria that you know, someone could claim, you know, triggers unmapped ESHA requirements for that site. So it's just determining on a community plan level that the USL area will be developed, and having those Coastal Act conflict findings to support that. The next option, option two, staff doesn't recommend, and that's mapping ESHA within the USL. Again, as soon as you designate an area within the USL as ESHA, that's severely limiting the development potential, and that's not recommended at this point. So that's my presentation on ESHA. If you have any questions on that, or if you'd like Carrie to just proceed with the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask a few questions or get clarification, if that's
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Erlen, so I think at our last meeting, the direction that we were headed, and I think that you guys have been responsive to this, is that within the urban services line, that is the area that is part of the build-out of this community, we wanted to make it as straightforward as possible for development to take place pursuant to the land use designations that we have, residential or whatever. And that those parcels that are inside the urban services line would participate in the HCT as appropriate, and that would be their mitigation that would allow them to proceed. And I think that's what you're trying to do with these alternatives here. What I'm not clear about is the creation of the overlay. Would the overlay just be on those areas that are green in the urban services line per the HCP, or would it be everything? Would be the entire urban services line, interior, the inside of that be part of the overlay?
Yeah, that is a good question. So our recommendation was for it to be the green area, since we've already kind of went through a screening process to identify those as the areas that kind of most closely match with the ESHA criteria. But I think there is a good argument for including all of the USL, because again, all of the USL could, and I think coastal has even suggested, maybe ESHA due to presence of baywood fine soils. So if we adopt this finding, I'm addressing the entire USL and maybe having these additional habitat protection standards apply to the entire USL. And kind of central to those protection standards is participation in the HCP.
Erlen, if I had a piece of property that's, that I wanted to develop within the USL, and it's not shown green on our overlay, if we were to take option 1A, I would still be subject to the HCP?
Correct.
Okay. And if I do have green and I want to develop, what we're proposing is that that person would also just be subject to the HCP.
More or less, there could be additional standards to, avoid sensitive habitat areas, as feasible or implement additional mitigation. But you're right, the central, factor is participating in the HCP.
And if we, I'll just leave it at that for now. I'm going to think about that a little bit more. But what we're trying to do is, and you guys have been sensitive to this, is to try to figure out a way in which somebody inside the urban services line can proceed in the most straightforward way possible through the participation in the HCP. And we don't want it to be mapped as it, because at least that level, there's not automatic appeal options. Which I think would just be one more complication on developments. So,
sorry to interrupt, but just to emphasize that this is where the finding regarding a conflict is very important, because even though a site may participate in the HCP, that doesn't alleviate it from having to comply with these very strict ESHA standards, whether mapped or unmapped.
Yes, right.
But through the finding, on a community plan level, we can acknowledge that, these sites are going to be developed, and that would help developers move forward and help implement the community plan.
Right. So option 1A gets closest to what we would like the outcome to be with the findings that you and council have put together.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So should we have Carrie proceed with the rest of the presentation?
Sure.
Please.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. Another item that was requested by your commission was an overview of the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan and how that helps landowners. So the Los Osos HCP covers 4 species, 2 animals and 2 plants, the Morro Bay kangaroo rat, Morro shoulder band snail, Morro manzanita, and Indian knob mountain bomb. And the covered activities basically is the build out of the community within the USL and within the URL. Parcels outside of the urban services line are limited to a maximum of 30 square feet of disturbance, and they are required to set aside a 3-to-1 ratio. Parcels within the USL pay a fee based on their area of disturbance. So, a small lot in the middle of town would just pay a fee, and that fee then goes towards enhancement, restoration, and enlarging the green belt. And as I said, parcels outside of the urban services line are limited to 30,000 square feet, and they must dedicate on-site conservation easements at a 3-to-1 ratio. And the Los Osos HCP was developed in conjunction with the community plan to allow for build-out of the community. The Los Osos HCP provides a mitigation plan for impacts to the 4 listed species and their habitats. Applicants within the urban services line would pay a fee, and then outside the urban services line, they would also pay a fee, but they would be limited to 30,000 square feet. So the HCP really is a vehicle to allow development within the community. Currently, private applicants are preparing their own habitat conservation plans, and that's takes time and money, and also kind of looks at mitigation on a project-by-project basis, whereas this community-wide habitat conservation plan is looking at, you know, it's a programmatic plan, and we're looking at conservation throughout the community and expanding the greenbelt. So it's kind of, it's a benefit to the community. Okay. So the other...
Before we move the HCP, so just to summarize, the idea that we've had collectively over the years is that we would designate an urban services line. Within that urban services line, development would be allowed to proceed over the next several years, decades. Outside the services line, though, we as a community have developed a green belt through a number of different mechanisms with the intent that it would preserve in a better way not only the boundaries of the community, but also the habitat that supports these species. And that the HCP is a way to implement that by saying everything within the urban services line is going to participate new development. And what they're going to do primarily, but not exclusively, is pay money, which will expand the green belt, although it's actually quite extensive already, and perhaps more importantly, to manage it over time, to maintain it. Outside the urban services line, where the green belt does largely exist already, there are still private properties, and those will be subject to the HCP as well, which is the limitation on the development to 30,000 square feet and the 3-to-1 conservation, as well as anything else that would apply at that time. So this is really trying to be the most protective in a truly comprehensive way, and trying to get habitat that is contiguous, substantial, and really protected into the long term, rather than doing this piecemeal kind of thing where it's all broken up in an area surrounded by development, and which has been aimed for development for a long time. If we go back in history, Los Osos should never have been developed, but you know that horse got out of the barn in the 20s. So we're trying to cope with what we have now. So I think with staff, what you've come up with is a fairly reasonable way of trying to move this thing forward. And I hope the Coastal Commission, along with Fish and Wildlife, understand the theory behind the protection of these larger contiguous habitats, rather than worrying about little pieces on small lots in a developed area. Anyway, that's just my summary in my mind. If I got anything wrong, let me know.
No, that was very, very well said.
Okay, thanks.
Can I ask you a question at this point? If a parcel, and this is, we've talked about these people, and we'll hear more about it, but if a parcel of ground does not have a tentative map on it yet, will that 30,000 square feet apply to the entire parcel, or will it wait and apply to each lot?
So it would apply to each lot, but
if it
could get a subdivision, I mean, the subdivision would evaluate ESHA or any kind of sensitive habitats when we're looking at a subdivision. The 30,000 square feet, the HCP actually doesn't cover subdivisions. So I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but...
Well, I'm just getting at if I owned 50 acres and I wanted to divide it into 50 one-acre housing projects, would I have 30,000 square feet for each one of those housing projects, all 50? Yep.
No, because you would not have, that subdivision is not approved yet. If you had an existing map that was approved and recorded, then you would get 30,000 on each one of those lots.
Okay, so that's why I asked the question.
And this is just
if somebody has property that's zoned yet not a map not done yet, they wouldn't get that 30 square feet per parcel, huh?
Right, but that's just for outside of the urban services line.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Carrie, that the limitation on what can happen on properties with ESHA kind of happens regardless of the HCP, because the Coastal Act is going to apply to that, and that's going to limit subdivisions. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So if you have a large piece of property, as some of the people who have written to us and commented to us have, and it's not currently subdivided, but it does have these sensitive habitats on it, regardless of what we do with the community plan, they're going to be subject to Coastal Act limitations on subdivisions. Does that sound about right?
I knew where I was coming from, through the back door.
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're getting at, and I'm just trying to restate it, make sure that I've got it straight. Is that right?
That's right, and that's why we didn't want to designate ESHA within the urban services line, because we did see where we would want, and that's where we want development.
And if there is, at this point, is the urban services line inviolate, or can it be jostled around?
It can be moved around at this point. I mean, this is when we're modifying boundaries, so this is the time that we could amend that.
Okay. Would that affect the HCT, though, since they have used this boundary as the guide?
It could. I guess it depends on what changes they are.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. I will continue. The other item that we needed to bring back to your commission were the comments and corrections to the circulation chapter and other chapters. And so please see attachment 5, where we have corrections to chapters 5, 6, and 8, as well as the appendices.
Were those a result of the Cribs memo?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm still getting comments, and I prepared a memo for you yesterday that included the comments that I received recently from Mr. Bolas, Beverly Boyd, Marie Smith, and Mr. Krebs did provide additional comments regarding the need for an active transportation plan and pedestrian plan. Also, I'm getting comments from others that concerns regarding the drive-through prohibition. There's also been concerns raised about the density in residential suburban, which is all outside of the urban services line, and all subject to that limitation that we talked about. And then I also received some concerns about the densities within the central business district. And I just wanted to bring those up since I'm getting lots of kind of last minute comments. So I just wanted to let you guys know what we're hearing on the street out here. I was so to say.
Yeah, 88 pages of them.
But with that, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the Estero Area Plan Amendment, the Los Osos Urban Area, or as we call it, the Los Osos Community Plan, and certification of the final environmental impact report pursuant to the applicable sections of CEQA, based on the findings contained in Attachment 4 of the staff report, and also approval of the amendments to the Growth Management Ordinance, Title 26. And that concludes our presentation.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have, first of all, Carrie and Erlen and everybody else and Kylie who worked on this, thank you very much. And I appreciate your responses to the late arriving correspondence. I do have some comments on those. But I would suggest that maybe we get the oral testimony first, and then we can talk amongst ourselves about these items.
Great.
Idea.
Okay. So Are there any members of the public that have comments, either comments or recordings?
Thank you, Chair Brown. We do not have pre-recorded messages. We do have live public comment. At this time, we have three requests to speak. And I'd like to just remind members of the public that if they wish to speak on this item, they can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of the screen or by pressing star 9 at this time. And we will begin our public comment with Ms. Lindy Owen, followed by CM Florence. Ms. Owen, your line has been unmuted.
Good morning, Lindy Owen, and from Los Osos. I had a problem with some of the maps. Without putting at least a few of the main streets in, it's difficult to go back and forth with maps. So I wish that some of the streets could be added to it. And the dates should be on each map. That would simplify things. I wanted to speak specifically to the Esha that exists in the middle of town. The Midtown site has been restored, 11 acres, and that is prime Esha at this point. The other two large parcels that exist there should be looked at, I believe, as Esha Mitigation Bank in order to preserve a central habitat corridor. That area has a number of oak trees. I would support growth around that central area, but that could be a prime bike walking path area. It should be restored as the Midtown site was restored. It's absolutely gorgeous. It connects with Sweet Springs, which is the habitat corridor for animals that need to get to the coastal area. And then my other concern is that when we look at Esha, we like to consider that all land in around Los Osos is identical. But the green belt is a different area in general. It because of the conformation, the geography of Los Osos, I don't believe that taking snails from the center of town and putting them up at the upper heights of town is necessarily conducive to protection of the species. So I just urge that we look at the center of town as the Esha Bank, mitigation bank for all development, and try to use the fees to preserve and enhance that, and at the same time make the walking trails and the connector bike way and walkway. My other issue is that maybe this isn't the right time, but we have absolutely no commercial service zoning for Los Osos, and we have an extreme need for that, especially when development does start to in order to put equipment, piles of gravel, dirt, whatever. And I would like to have that addressed at some point because there's a real need for it. When I asked about it, I was told that there was no place to put it, therefore it was excluded. And I don't think that's a good approach. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The next request to speak is CM Flores, followed by Dave Bullis. Miss Florence, your line is unmuted.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the commission. I am Carol Florence, principal planner with Oasis Associates. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to address the commission. We represent the Fluid Schmidt family members who own three parcels totaling 11 acres located west of South Bay Boulevard and bounded by 18th Street, El Moro Avenue, and Pismo Avenue. They also own a fourth property, approximately 4 acres, located on the east side of South Bay Boulevard. We have commented on the LOCP EIR, provided both written and verbal testimony during the last two Planning Commission hearings, and provided a recent set of comments distributed to you by Ms. Hedges. We feel that we have immersed ourselves in reviewing and analyzing the various documents related to the LOCP, feel that we understand the nuances and details, and want to reiterate our overarching concern. As you have heard in previous testimony, the ESHA designation within the USL has the potential to negatively impact the ability to develop these and other properties in Los Osos and achieve important housing and economic sustainability goals and objectives. Our recent comments can be summed up thusly. First, the LOCP ESHA map is inconsistent with the official and certified Estero Area Plan combining designation map. Secondly, we would again request the ESHA designation on our clients' properties, and especially now based upon staff's stated exclusion criteria, as the properties are clearly surrounded by development on all sides. Third, we have new information from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife regarding the status of the Marl shoulder band snail that may influence future development of the properties. Again, perhaps it is premature to designate these properties as ESHA. And finally, we ask that you preserve and protect your jurisdiction with regards to mapped versus non-mapped ESHA and not create additional opportunities to lessen local control. Before I close, I just wanted to take a moment to read the Coastal Act policy that Mr. Singwald alluded to, and that's 3007.5. I think this would actually be the appropriate review of what hopefully the commission will decide today. And it reads, the legislature finds and recognizes that conflicts may occur between one or more policies of the division. It therefore declares that in carrying out the provision of this division, such conflicts be resolved in a manner which on balance is the most protective of significant coastal resources. In this context, it also declares that broader policies which, for example, serve to concentrate development in close proximity to urban and employment centers may be more protective overall than specific wildlife habitat and other similar resource policies. Thank you for that. In closing, we would respectfully request that you consider removal of the LOCP ESHA map and maintain the mapped ESHA currently identified in the Estero Area Plan's official combining designation map. While this venue unfortunately provides no opportunity for robust exchange, I will simply leave you with our request that is supported by the information that we have provided over the last three hearings. With that said, I have faith that you will make a considered and informed recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you very much for the opportunity this morning.
Thank you, and I'll ask staff to, when we finish other comment, to make a comment on this, these two maps being combined. Next.
Thank you, Chair. At this time, before we take the last speaker, I'd like to remind members of the public that if they wish to speak on this item, this is your opportunity, and you can do so by using the raise hand feature or by pressing star nine, at the bottom of your screen. Last request to speak at this time is Dave Bolas. Mr. Bolas, your line has been unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My wife and I both submitted comments following the last meeting on this subject, and we just want to commend the staff in planning and public works, especially Carrie Brown and Mike Britton, for paying attention to those comments and taking them into account. Unfortunately, we contributed to the many pages you folks have to read as commissioners. Also, just thank you very much to Commissioner Mike Moltari for his attention to our area and concern about all things out here. And finally, I'd just like to agree with Lindy Owen in her suggestion that natural areas inside of the urban area should be preserved wherever possible. So thank you very much, and that's all I have to say today. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, staff, you have...
Chair Brown, I do have one additional request to speak.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. It's caller ending with the last three numbers of 873. If you could please state your name for the record, and we are attempting to unmute your connection at this time. caller with the number ending in 873, you should receive a notification from Zoom saying that the host is attempting to unmute your connection. And right you're now. There we go.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you, staff, Mr. Chairman, commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. And with the limited amount of time, I'm going to run through the items I have fairly quickly. First of all, with regard to ESHA, the Baywood Fine Sands is the problem. Your commission should reject the notion of Baywood Fine Sands as being consistent with ESHA. I can't think of any community in California, the United States, or the world that has this kind of a soil-based, environmentally sensitive habitat program. As you do proceed, I would ask you to exclude the entire USL from ESHA and pursue option 1B that would not allow for an additional overlay of any kind. So that's ESHA. Now on to growth management. I know you've considered the exemption of second-level commercial conversion of commercial buildings into residential. I would also ask you to exempt senior housing, 55 and over, senior housing from Title 26. Next is circulation. I would ask you to, and this is in connection with zone change number 22 for the formerly core property at Ramona and 4th Street in Baywood Park, now owned by the Land Conservancy, please add an area standard that would make it clear that there's going to be a north-south connection to Baywood Park from Los Osos at that location. It's not clear now. Regarding the Central Business District, staff mentioned the additional densities. At this time, the CBD has densities of 15 units per acre for multifamily and 19 units an acre for senior. Please make them consistent with the Morro Shores planning area standards of 26 units an acre for multifamily and 38 units per acre for senior housing. Also, please strike the drive-through prohibition. Drive-throughs are going to be integral to the post-COVID scenario. Regarding water, I would ask you to reconsider and establish a level of severity 2 for water. This is going to be critically important as this plan goes forward to the Coastal Commission. If it remains LOS 3, I don't think they're going to approve it. So please consider LOS 2 for water. Also, I want to mention a 66-acre property outside the USL. It's the Iacono property, and the density change from 1 unit per 2.5 acres to 1 unit per 5 acres is a regulatory taking of property without compensation. The densities should not be changed outside the USL. Please retain the 2.5 acre minimum parcel size. And lastly, I'll just mention the letters that you received in the attachments 1 through 4. I wish my letter that I sent months ago would have received the same attention that these late last-minute letters got, many of which were confusing and lacked substance, in my view. So, again, please help the CDB increase densities, allow drive-throughs. That's important. It's very critical. And then the circulation piece that I mentioned, the north-south connection to Ramona. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Staff, I hope you were taking notes. Do you have comments?
Is there any other anybody else who
doesn't look like it?
Okay.
No.
All right. So the hearing's closed?
It is.
Very good.
And staff, do you have any comments, what you just heard?
Yes, I do. Carrie Brown. So we heard some comments about the ESHA and a lot of people wanting ESHA to be in the middle of town and have an ESHA bank in the middle of town. We wanted to focus on the existing greenbelt, and that's what our HCP does. We did consider looking at the middle of town, but in the end, we thought that it would be best to focus development in the urban services line where
where we want the development, and then to focus our conservation efforts outside of the urban services line and to increase the existing greenbelt. So that's kind of where that came from. I also heard about
before you leave that, can I, Carrie? Sure. Just in the center of town, if there are places that are appropriate for preservation of open space or trails and so on, the fact that it's not designated ESHA doesn't preclude it from being kept in open space or used for other passive uses. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I also heard, and I've heard this numerous times from Lindy Owen about the commercial service, the lack of commercial service in the community. And we did look very closely at commercial service and where we could find additional areas. It's very much a residential community. And so to get additional residential or commercial service, we would have to convert some of that residential area. Basically, our central business district is surrounded by residential. And the only way to increase commercial service that we saw would be to take out residential. And we did not want to do that. And there's also going to be conflict because we have a lot of non-conforming residential within our commercial service and commercial retail areas. So we did look at that, but we concluded that there weren't areas that we could change to commercial service. So that's commercial service. Then we heard more about ESHA and that the existing ESHA map in the Estero area plan. As part of an update, you know, when we're looking at Estero, we update all of the maps. We look at them. For example, the archaeologically sensitive area. The current map shows almost the whole community as archaeologically sensitive. But we're proposing to reduce the archaeologically sensitive area because we've learned more about the archaeological resources within the community as part of the sewer project. So to just say that it's not consistent with the Estero area plan, this is actually an amendment to the Estero area plan. So we will be amending our maps as appropriate. So that's where we are with the ESHA map. And then let's see what else. Then we heard about the CBD, increased densities, exempting senior housing and circulation around the Ramona area. This has been something that we've heard lots of comments about, the north-south connection. There's quite a few people that are not supportive of that, and then we have a lot of people that are supportive of it. And so I would like Public Works' input, but we left some flexibility in the standard so that that north-south connection, if it's deemed not necessary based on the level of development that happens within that middle of town area, that potentially that north-south connection may not be needed, but that would be at the discretion of the Public Works Department. And so we wrote that into that section. What else? I think that's it.
Okay.
Okay, Carrie, in response to that, first of all, could you show us on a map where the properties that Carol Florence is concerned about are and what's in the USL and what's outside the USL? I think I know, but I just want to be sure.
Yes, just give me a minute and I will bring that up.
Had a good map the last hearing showing that. Maybe you still have it there.
I almost have it up. Bear with me. Can everyone see that?
I can see the map.
Okay. I'm going to put on the urban services line. That's the urban services line.
The map is showing South Bay Boulevard very clearly. It gave us a good look at that.
Yeah, can you zoom in a little bit there?
Oh, you were looking here.
Mm-hmm.
These are the properties that Ms. Florence was discussing, and I believe the property owner also owns this one. So one is outside the urban services line, and then three are inside.
And the portion that's outside, it seems like there's a little cul-de-sac there, and it's next to the school. Why didn't it jog around there? Because it's
This is the existing.
I see. Okay.
And I think it really just jogged over here to grab the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a good one. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
And then this was the other area.
Mm-hmm. If you could leave that map, I'd appreciate it there for a little bit, Carrie.
Sure.
The coast isn't my bailiwick, so I'm listening very carefully to all the comments, et cetera, about the center of town issue and this kind of stuff, but I really can't focus hardly on them because I don't live there. I'm not in that territory. But I really am hung up on this word taking of people's land. And so my emphasis on this thing, and I'll follow here with a specific question for you, is how safe are these people for developing land that's zoned already for residential and residential suburban? So if we were to vote on option 1B for boy, tell me exactly how that would affect the Pruitt's property. If they came to you and said, we want to start building houses in this or get a map, whatever it takes, how is this going to be applied?
Well, one of the standards for all of the parcels in Los Osos that are over a half acre are required to do a biological study. So we would do a biological study and determine if there are any sensitive areas. We have the HCP, so and they are in the urban services line, so... The hope is that we could just use that and they would be able to subdivide. However, subdivisions are appealable to the Coastal Commission. So the county, any kind of subdivision is appealable. So even if the county was to approve it, the Coastal Commission may have issues with it. We don't know. I understand that totally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I certainly understand that aspect of it and the Coastal Commission, et cetera. And I'm sure they understand what they might be faced with because we have for ages been faced with since the inception of the Coastal Commission. So I'm just saying to myself, is this going to be an out and out upfront taking where they can't even bother to come in for an application? But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like they have the same prerogative of applying for whatever they want to do under option 1B. Is that correct?
Yes.
With the exception.
Thank you.
Would that be with the exception, though, of the 4 acres that are outside the urban reserve line?
Right. Urban services line, correct, yes.
So these 4 acres up here, Don, that would not be included in that assessment, right? So
right
in, big piece, yes. But not that piece that's right on the other side of Bay Boulevard, South Bay Boulevard. And then I have one question as long as we're talking on this. So in the bigger piece that's inside the urban line, if they wanted to put, we talked about senior housing a minute ago, if they wanted to put senior housing there, same process in a sense. Is that correct or is it not designated at this point? How does that work? I don't understand.
So right now the zoning is residential single family and we're not proposing to change it. So they would just go through the normal process, you know, if they were looking at, they couldn't really do like a senior facility that's high density because that would probably be more in the multifamily area, but they could do a senior facility there. Okay. You would just need to meet the single family standards.
Hmm. Okay. All right. And then back on the you know, the driving around there yesterday and looking at that parcel outside, the 4 acres above here, only because of the school and then the church or whatever all that is up above that, to the north, I kind of was thinking that 4 acre, it's kind of interesting. I mean, that piece is carved out, but not this piece. And I guess that, you know, it is kind of open space, but it also does, it seems like the carve out could actually extend, but I'm just talking actually at this point.
You're thinking like the line could go from like here or something?
Yeah. I mean, you already got, you know, looking at that whole area and stuff, it's kind of, you know, it's already somewhat disturbed, quote unquote. But I don't
want developed.
Yeah.
So right now, we're saying basically that one piece below the whatever it is school that's outside the boundary is there's not much use for it. Yeah, that area.
What we're saying is that piece is going to be outside the urban service line, and so that will have a little bit more. That would be the ESHA, and that would require a little bit more. It would have the ability to be immediately appealed to the coastal zone, which is the other side wouldn't. Is that correct, Mr. Moultari?
I'm not sure.
If this is ESHA, sorry, I'm going to interrupt, then that does make it appealable.
So it's an immediately appealable to somebody who would want to take that on if they decided, as opposed to if we have the services line come across and just take in the school and this, as Carrie kind of pointed out, from where it's at the top where it's carved out and we carve out that little framework, then while it has to go through all the other, you know, processes of mitigations and environmental review, it's not quite as easily appealable. Well, it just is a little less onerous, perhaps, is the word.
It also affects the, you know, the level of services that will be provided.
You're right. Yeah.
And it also, you know, if you can even see on this aerial, is that it's one thing to move the urban services line to include an area that but if there are these sensitive plants and animals on the ground, it doesn't change anything. You still have to do the biological survey. You still have to do the analysis. There will be limitations on the ability to subdivide that piece of property. But it does seem to be biologically just, I won't even say because I'm not the expert, but just looking at it, it does look different from the other side of South Bay Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's contiguous with, you know, open space that runs down to the creek. Whereas on the other side of South Bay Boulevard, those parcels are contiguous with a developed town. So mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of a, you know, non-trivial difference between both sides of the road.
Yeah.
I think staff's designation or however the urban services line got written is not arbitrary or capricious. It's actually rather sensible. So
I can appreciate that.
My thinking then here is we're leaving these people with not a lot different than they've had all along. If we accept option 1B, the same things prevail. They have the right to apply for several things. These rights may go to the Coastal Commission. We know all of that. And without any of this change, they probably still would have had to do all sure. those things. So I'm just hung up on not taking something from somebody, but I'm convincing myself that we really are not taking anything away, especially that inside the USL.
In any case, the Coastal Act doesn't say that you can't develop properties. It always says that you have a minimum amount that would make a reasonable use. And so mm-hmm. that would be a potential. There might even be a way where, if I were the planner for that, I might be interested in trying some strategy where you would allow higher density on the east side of, or the west side of the road and use the preservation of the east side of the road for mitigation or something like that. I mean, I'm not proposing that today. I'm just saying that there may be ways to.
I just want to be sure there are ways they can pursue their property, and I think we've covered that.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Mr. Edwards' comments, can I just run through those? First of all, he's suggesting, and I've heard, that option 1B is preferred. But staff, you think that 1A provides the greater flexibility and protection for property owners than 1B? Could you just comment on that?
So this is Erwin Singwall, planning staff.
Yeah.
I think actually, so 1B would provide the greater flexibility because it would essentially just rely on the HCP to okay. mitigate impacts to sensitive habitat areas, whereas 1A would add an additional layer of restrictions. An approach mm-hmm. like 1A may have a better chance getting past the Coastal Commission, but 1B would be less restrictive.
Okay. All right. And what about exempting senior housing and the growth management ordinance? It seems like the growth management ordinance is more expansive than just Los Osos.
So this is Erwin Singwald again. Currently affordable housing is exempt. So affordable senior housing would be exempt from the growth management ordinance. The commission's prerogative to recommend another exemption for senior housing, but it could allow for high cost and affordable senior housing to be developed. And I think as we add to the list of exemptions, the second story commercial residential conversion, ADUs, affordable housing, unaffordable senior housing, if you added that, I think mm-hmm. it begins to kind of question the basis for having an exemption
right.
or having the restriction in the first place if there's a growing list of exemptions. So I think that's worth considering.
And then, Erlen, another housing question then. Mr. Edwards talked about increasing the densities in the central business district for housing. Do you have a comment about that? Or maybe
I don't. Maybe Carrie, do you have any comments on that?
Increased densities in the central business district. We have pretty low densities currently, and we are seeing more of a desire for that. So staff would be supportive of increased densities in the central business district, but we would still want as long as it's still within the standards of residential uses and commercial land use categories, because we want to make sure that, it's subordinate and not, we want the commercial to be the major component there.
Yeah, I think there's a limited amount of commercial in Los Osos as it is. And what we wouldn't want to do is have to lose that entirely to residential. What we're looking for is mixed use, and in the mixed use, to maximize the residential. But with if it was affordable, it could, there would be the density bonus options that would increase the densities over and above what the current standards are. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Drive-through prohibitions. I'm not really enamored of drive-throughs, and I hope that the value of them during the pandemic will not be permanent. So I don't know how other commissioners feel, but I'm not, I don't think drive-throughs are a good thing.
Maybe. Can you give us an example of a drive-through?
Yeah, McDonald's or a...
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, in Paso Robles, they're still, they're out into the main streets. They're backed up so bad to get coffee.
I think it's, more environmentally superior to people to park their cars rather than idle them, go into the store and get their stuff. You know, now we're in extraordinary times, but I don't think that means we should make permanent changes to the rules. That would just be my opinion about that.
Mm. I agree with that opinion.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I would say on that, and I agree with you on the environmentally sensitive part, I guess with some senior citizens that have a hard time, I mean, I hear this because in San Luis Obispo, you know, city, we don't have drive-through. A lot of older seniors like that service. I'm not sure. I'm like this on it, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. That's a tough one. I don't like cars idling and pulling, you know, sitting there. I agree with you on that. Maybe one of the COVID services that have happened, though, is that people wait in their cars and they come out like the old drug thing. That's going to be a value-added service that a business can offer in order to capture those who want that type of service.
I think there are options other than designing drive-throughs. There were two other comments from Mr. Edwards that I just want to go on. He suggested that we go from LOS 3 to LOS 2. I don't think that's something that the community plan can do. I think that's based on other criteria and analyses that go beyond what we're doing today. I see Kylie showed up. Do you have a comment about that?
Yes, so we didn't explicitly discuss the resource summary report, which recommends the level of severity designation for the water supply, but I can clarify why the LOS 3 recommendation is what we're proposing, just for the record. The resource summary report assigns the level of severity designation to a water supply based on the time frame for the remaining estimated dependable water supply for forecasted demand. And LOS 3 designation is appropriate if the existing demand already equals or exceeds the estimated existing dependable supply. So the LOS 3 is recommended to continue because the basin plan programs recommended for phase one immediate implementation still are not complete. And as those programs are completed and verified with ongoing monitoring data, that level of severity may be reduced. And the GMO and the Los Osos Community Plan continue requiring an offset, 2-to-1 offset for new structures. So that is addressing the existing water situation.
And certainly the bulk of the comments that we received from the public with regard to water is not that it's less severe, it's more severe. So.
Exactly.
And then lastly, his comment was on the Iacono site being having the density reduced. Do you have a comment about that, Carrie?
Sure. This area is outside of the urban services line. I guess the density now is 1 per 2.5 acres, and we're proposing 1 per 5 acres. However, this area is outside the urban services line. This is an area where we want to focus on preservation of sensitive habitat. And so that's really the reason why we have that density. And likely a subdivision would not be allowed anyway due to the presence of environmentally sensitive habitat.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure that we, you know, covered the bases. It's 10:30, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to take the break now? I do have some other comments about Mr. Bolas's letter, but
okay.
I see right. Commissioner Ortiz's leg shaking her head. Yes.
No, thank you for bringing up the comments, having staff address them, and I'm ready for a break.
Okay. 15 minutes, okay?
Fine for me.
All right. You, we'll sir. Meet at 10:45.
Thank you.
Everybody unmuted?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
now. Commissioner Montari, you were going to talk about Dave Bolas' letter?
Just a few comments. First of all, I really appreciate his detailed letters and paying attention to a lot of the words in the plan, as well as just the policies and maps. He gets Dave gets quite lyrical at times, which I think is perfectly fine. I just wanted to point out that looking at staff's response to that, I think staff did a really nice job of being thoughtful about it. I agree with almost everything that you all your responses. Just a couple of minor things, but probably worth mentioning. On page 3 of 20 in attachment 1, Carrie, Mr. Bolas had suggested that we include commercial and recreational opportunities, and staff said that's not necessary. I still think that's a good idea. It may not be necessary, but part of the reason why it's designated as a national estuary by the Congress is because of its commercial value. Another thing, too, staff mentions that the estuary has been recognized by NOAA, and that's incorrect. It's not. NOAA is for Estuary and Research Reserves. This is a national estuary program. It was designated by Congress, and it actually is the funding is administered through the EPA as a non-regulatory program, so just for your own information. And along those lines, on page 7, Mr. Bullis was concerned about items related to the estuary that didn't seem to have direct bearing on it, but it's actually the wording that is in the paragraph is the estuary together with its watershed, and that really is an important thing because it's the designation of Morro Bay as a national estuary definitely encompasses the watershed, and the watershed is what makes the bay so vulnerable and so vibrant. And things like grazing on the hillsides is important to recognize. Electrical power generation is no longer taking place. I would agree with that. But transmission still is, as we still have gigantic transmission lines from Diablo crossing the watershed. And the what happens with them in the future is going to be an interesting question when the power plant gets decommissioned. Minor point, but I think to be consistent with this national designation, it'd be worth keeping that in, except for the electrical generation. And one other thing that was mentioned by him, and I think also by Marie Smith, is the lateral access along the shoreline. I would agree pretty strongly that a trail in that sensitive area, in that sensitive part of the bay shore, could be quite damaging to very sensitive bird habitat. But I'm not sure that this is the place for that discussion to take place and for that deletion to take place, since it's really in the parks and recreation element. But I would definitely support that if and when that comes to public discussion. And I have some other wordsmithing things that I would, but I won't do it because I don't want to take time, and I don't think it's substantive. But I do appreciate his comments and staff's response. I also wanted to mention Beverly Boyd's comments about circulation, and staff responded to them, I think, very well. And Mr. Krebs's follow-up letter, calling for a local mobility analysis. I think that may be valuable, but I don't think that needs to be done before the community plan and related documents can proceed. I did have one other question for staff, though. Earlier on, the Sierra Club submitted a letter saying that the GHG section of the EIR was not adequate. Do you have a response to that?
I can look into that and get back to you. I had a response, but it's not at the tip of my hands at this point.
Okay. But you've thought about their comment, and you have a I personally think that the GHG section of the EIR is adequate, but, again, I'm not a greenhouse gas expert. So I guess I would just like to say thanks staff for the work that they've done, and the community and especially the people that corresponded so thoughtfully and have spoken over the last three hearings. And I just would remind us and anybody who's tuning in that this is just the first bite at this apple. It has to go to the Board of Supervisors, then to the Coastal Commission. The HCP has to get approved by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And frankly, this is going to take years. So my personal feeling would be with some of the comments that we provide today, we can move this on to the Board of Supervisors and just keep the process moving. So
I have, thank you. Who wants to, are we going to continue to comment here, Chairman?
I'm done.
Well, we've got. I am not going to comment. You know, I'm a landlubber, just like Don Campbell. So, but it sounds like you're ready for one, Don.
Yeah. Don, Campbell, do you want to say something? Because I got a couple of notes and whenever, but I'll leave it to you.
Say that the comments by Michael Moltari were excellent, and I certainly follow through on in thanking the time that these people have made at responding, and then the county's response to them is very, very nicely done. We appreciate that.
And Don.
All right. Well, yes, I agree that I love the input and the vision that has been put forth, and I know that, you know, for me, I think more access and facilitation of activities that work for the people of Los Osos and to continue to make it a valued visitor destination as well as a wonderful place to live, I think is really important. And I think it's important to have the public be able to access all of these special places. The one thing that I wanted to, on your notes, Commissioner Moltari, in regards to Mr. Bolus's comments on the commercial aspect and all of that, the electrical generation, while the plant in Morro Bay, as well as the potential decommissioning of Diablo is on the deck, I am wondering, what does that do for any other generation that could come off of the coast, such as wind power?
The waves?
Well, I don't know if the title is appropriate or it's has been able to be something that is actually feasible, but I think the wind power is something. And with that, you know, we want to make sure that that is a capability and that doesn't impacted by anything that we would do here.
It's just a descriptive paragraph, frankly, with some bullet points. It doesn't really mean much. If it were to come on shore and take advantage of the distribution lines that are existing at the old power plant in Morro Bay, it would come in somewhere in the city, not in the county, almost for certain. Whether it would be in the bay itself or on the other side of the rock where the outfall is now, who could say? But I don't think anything that we put in this, whether we leave it in or take it out, has any bearing on that.
Well, that's all I wanted to make sure, and maybe staff wants to respond to that, because I do think we need to be forward thinking, and you know, those assets that are there are critical assets and not so easy to put up, let alone take down. So if we can utilize them in a better way in the future, I want to make sure that is open to us. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to ask about, and we didn't talk about this before, but I noticed on one of the pieces that in regards to public facilities and on attachment 5, page 59-102, we talked about parks. And in the top paragraph at 8.3.3, public facilities, the lack of park is one thing. And then there was a piece about this 13.7-acre zone for public facilities is a county-owned site, Midtown, that is adjacent to the current Los Osos Community Park, could serve as a major expansion of a current park. But because the site is currently deed-restricted, the county would need to coordinate with the Coastal Commission to improve the land, because the site is not currently available for parkland development, is not accounted. Is that what the deed restriction is? Can that be explained to me a little bit more, please, staff?
So are you wondering about the deed restriction at the Midtown site?
Yes.
Okay. As part of the sewer project that the County Public Works Department installed and throughout the community, that site was... they were required to restore it. It was actually the site of a previous sewer project, and Public Works was required to restore it and deed restrict it so that it would remain in its preserved state in perpetuity.
In other words, it's not safe or sanitary, or?
Well, it just means that they wanted it to be preserved forever. However, because of the location adjacent to our existing park and library, we do want to be able to use that site in the future. However, we will probably need to replace or find an alternative mitigation for that site, for the Midtown site.
So that's just a kind of a community project kind of a thing that would have to be taken on by folks that would like to see that and have that exchanged out, if you will. And that's what it's going to take, is to move it out of the mitigation column into a potential for public facility and recreation, considering the location being adjacent to what's already there. And that's really what it's going to take. That's what I needed to know. I didn't have that history, and I appreciate that. Carrie, what about the other piece that I asked about? I know that Mike, you know, that Commissioner Motari mentioned that it really was just a small paragraph, but I just do want to hear from staff on the electrical facility piece.
Yeah, that section in the community plan is in chapter four, which is the environmental resources. And it really is just a description of all of the environmental resources. Demorrow Bay Estuary and Watershed is a whole section. And so although it has, you know, it talks about these bullet points, if you remove that, it would not prevent offshore wind from coming in at some point. It wouldn't be an actual standard. It's really just a description.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your education, folks. I appreciate it. I also like the addressing of the sea level rise. I think that's very important. I think that all of the things that are on here in regards to the circulation are really detailed and so important for folks to be able to get around. But as long as we've gotten through the other piece on the ESHA and, you know, keeping the boundary line where it is in regards to USL, then I think that I'm good with what we're working with at this point, so that the folks are not being included in ESHA on their main piece of property, and that they could actually utilize their other 4 acres on the other side of South Bay Boulevard for a mitigation piece. I think that makes sense. And that's pretty much the comments that I have at this point. Thank you.
Okay. this is your district, Commissioner Mulberry?
Yes, it is. I guess I'm ready to make a motion then that we forward this on to the Board of Supervisors. So let's see, it'd be the approval of the Estero Plan Amendment, Los Osos Urban Area, Los Osos Community Plan, and approval of the amendments to the Growth Management Ordinance, and recommend certification of the final EIR. With the changes that were provided to us in response to Mr. Bolas's letter, Ms. Boyd's letter, Mr. Krebs's letter. And then the question is option 1A or option 1B with regard to the ESHA. After hearing the latest thing, I think 1B is probably the superior option at this point. I guess before I make this final motion, I'd like to hear once more from staff, maybe from county council, which they think is the better option, because you're saying prefer A, but most of the testimony we've had a discussion was on option B. So I don't know, Erlen, if you want to say anything. Yeah.
So this is Erlen Singwald, planning staff. I'll start off the conversation or the response, and then let Brian Stack add anything that he would like to add. First of all, I realize that I didn't provide many specific examples of the types of restrictions that could come with the overlay under option 1A. So just for the record, in case the board wanted to consider this option, some potential restrictions could be requiring a biological assessment for any project, and within that overlay, limiting the footprint of development, minimizing removal of native vegetation, or requiring larger minimum parcel sizes for subdivisions. In response to your question, I think after listening to the deliberation and public testimony, I think the option 1B does make more sense. Again, I think the advantage of option 1A is it helps us build a better case with the Coastal Commission for not essentially considering the areas within the USL as ESHA for allowing development. But as far as greater flexibility, while still recognizing that VHCP is available to mitigate impacts, option 1B would be the superior option. And I don't know if Mr. Sack wants to add anything to that.
Sure. Brian Sack with County Council's office. I agree with Erlyn's sentiments. And at the end of the day, for both options, you know, it would require, finding by the county that there is a conflict within the Coastal Act between two different policies. And the Coastal Act provides the framework through which to reconcile that conflict. And it does indicate a priority given towards steering development towards urban areas in a manner that would be more protective overall. So I think both 1A and 1B, the draft finding that's been provided, that certainly could justify either of those two options. And I think also, big picture, any subdivision application would have to be judged on its own merits, and the environmental habitat issue would undoubtedly come up then. I think 1B is pushing that issue off into the future and would be more like the status quo or the traditional flow of these projects. And 1A would be front loading some of those issues, and whether that, as Erlyn mentioned, may or may not be more, Coastal Commission may be more amenable to that. It's not necessarily one for us to speculate on, I think. It's at the end of the day, is the county finding that there is this conflict, and how do we think we can resolve it pursuant to the Coastal Act in a manner that's, most protective of coastal resources?
Thank you.
Okay.
So I think option 1B at this stage is the recommendation that I would make. As we said, this is going to take undoubtedly a long time before it even gets to the Coastal Commission, and I'm sure there's going to be discussions between the staffs before it goes to the Board of Supervisors to try to reconcile this stuff. So I think 1B would be my recommendation if there's consensus amongst my fellows there.
And we have a second. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay.
And then... Okay.
Commissioner Moultrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Mic is off.
Try again, John.
Your mic is off.
Sorry about that. Yes.
And Chairman Brown?
Yes.
The motion passes.
And I assume in that motion, Carrie, that there was enough direction for all these changes that have come up of late to be incorporated.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. We get to go home for lunch. Some of us. I'll entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record. So move.
Somebody? So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting on October 22nd, 2020.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Interesting meeting.
Yeah.
It just goes to show if you have a topic that goes over three continuing continuances, I personally lose something in the transition. It's just too long. We had to do it, but it's the danger of continuing something over a period of months. And
these planning and vision documents are so important, and yet it does take a lot a lot of understanding. Appreciate staff for patience with us. And also, as you mentioned, Commissioner Maltari, the input from the public who care about the community.
Yeah, he's stuck, it's his district, he stuck together, he stuck with it, and I'm certainly glad of that. Okay, everybody have a good weekend.
We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman Brown, for coming down, and thank you, everybody, for a great meeting.
Thank you.
Bye.